contrary to popular wishes, we haven't all been burnt at the stake and served up with a spicy Cajun sauce. This is episode 2 of the Tux Radar podcast. I'm Paul Hudson.
I'm Graham Morrison.
I'm Mike Saunders.
And I'm Andrew Gregory.
And in this episode, we're talking about Moonlight 1.0 being released, HP pulls out of the netbook market, Firefox performance on Linux tends to suck, is the recession a good thing for free software, and the rise and rise of Ubuntu, does it help the distro world or not? Remember, all this is brought to you by Linux Format Magazine, the number one source for Linux news, reviews, tutorials, and wit. Subscribe today at tinyurl.com/podcastlxf and pay just $99 for 13 issues. So top news since our last podcast, Moonlight 1.0 has been released. It is, of course, the free software re-implementation of Mono. What do you think, guys?
What can it really do that Flash can't? That's what everybody's going to be asking. What's its capabilities? What benefits does it deliver?
Well, it's open source, isn't it, for a start? So it'll work in other platforms.
Ah, but it does need Windows codecs, doesn't it? It needs certain codecs from
Microsoft. No. It doesn't need Windows codecs.
Right.
If you put Windows codecs on, you can get, you know, videos and blah, 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 all this multimedia stuff. But it actually has FFmpeg support. But, which means it'll play back Vorbis and other codecs as well.
But that means you can't guarantee what people have. So you've got Moonlight installed, but you may not have certain codecs.
Yeah.
And
then
it just becomes a nightmare to support, doesn't it, on a site. You can say, if somebody's got Flash, you can view this. But this is like, oh, have you got Moonlight and have you got this codec and you got that codec? It sounds like a mess to me.
A potential mess, yeah. But I think the way it works right now in Firefox, you know, you go to Flash page, it goes, oh, you haven't got Flash, click here to install it.
Yeah.
That works quite nicely.
Great.
Isn't it based on Mono? Do you need Mono for...
It's based on Mono. You do need Mono. Yeah, you need Mono. It's a spin-off of the Mono project by the same guys who made Mono. I think under the same license as Mono, too. So yeah, you do need Mono. But
that's not the GPL, is it?
Not the GPL. I think it's partly GPL, partly MIT X11, partly LGPL, partly...
Nice.
Who knows what. It's a bit of a mix of licenses, but I haven't got a problem with that. It's all open source, free software approved stuff, so it's not a big problem.
And how compatible is it with Silverlight?
It's Silverlight 1.0
right.
Today, and they are working on 2.0 support right now. That's the big stuff. 2.0 is the really big stuff, the really cool C-sharp back-end stuff that makes it do really neat stuff.
Right now
it's just JavaScript, accelerated using Moonlight. So it's very, very fast JavaScript, but can do more.
So are there many sites that are using Silverlight 1.0 specification, or have they already moved on?
Yeah, I think the Barack Obama inauguration speech used Silverlight 1.0 to stream the speech live.
Right.
And the best bit was it actually had a Linux users click here link beneath that. And that worked. It would install and load Moonlight and would play. So if you were going to the Barack Obama inauguration, as a Windows user, you would see, wait a minute, wow, what's this Linux thing? So it's, I think, a nice bit of PR.
Have you tried it with the Ryanair site yet?
Ah, that's the last podcast.
That's the real test, yeah, the Ryanair site.
Can it get me somewhere nice and warm?
Well, the nice spin-off to Moonlight is, of course, Moonshine, which has recently been announced. And it basically takes all the Moonlight functionality and makes it available to general Linuxy stuff. So you can play back any of the Windows codec terrors, like Windows Media Video, Windows Media Audio, blah, blah, using Firefox without Silverlight, or using the desktop without Firefox. It makes it available using Mono and Moonlight, which I think is very, very cool.
Yeah, but all this talk of Windows Media Audio, Windows Media Video, that's not healthy, surely. We should be looking to OGG and
Theora. Well, it's good that it plays them both, I think. It makes it available to play both. And if people really want Windows Media Video, what they're doing now is they're getting MPlayer and they're downloading those dodgy DLLs and dropping them in. And it works. I've got to admit, it does work. But it's not a very nice solution.
No, but there's a bit of resistance against it then, isn't there? If it becomes really, really easy for everybody to be able to use WMV and WMA, then those formats become so pervasive.
I thought the idea of freedom of choice was to make it easy for people to choose, not rather.
Yeah, as long as they choose to do what I say. It's really as simple as that.
Also in the news, HP is pulling out of the Linux netbook market in the UK.
Yeah, this is the Mini 1000 netbook they're coming out with soon. And they've announced that in certain markets across Europe, they're not going to be shipping Linux with it. And you know, this is obviously disappointing for us. But when you look at some of the problems people have with Linux on netbooks, it perhaps isn't that surprising.
I think actually on our colleague's site, techradar.com, it's a great site, make sure you go to it, guys. They found some monkey to provide a quote. It said, HP HP is clearly responding to customer demand, and I have no problem with that. It is a company, not a charity.
Well, but possibly so. There's been messages on our forum, so people have got their netbook with Linux. It's great, it all works fine, but as soon as they try and install some software, they immediately have to delve into repositories and dependencies, and that's not good.
Interestingly, at the weekend, I was reading in the Sunday paper, the Sunday Times here in the UK. They did a roundup of netbooks, and in a sidebar, they explained what netbooks were and what operating systems they ran.
Right.
They said they nearly all ran a cut-down version of Windows XP, and some of them use a cheap, dated operating system called Linux.
Uh-oh.
Cheap, dated.
Yeah.
I had a similar kind of thing at the weekend. I went into PC World and strolled over to the netbook section, and the sales lady there was talking to a couple of people, and she said, well, you don't want these machines because they run Linux. So,
But are they just saying that because they're getting so many returns from people saying, it doesn't work with my Internet Explorer?
Yeah, I can't install this fluffy bunny screensaver.
That lass in America.
Yeah.
Trying to double-click on an .exe file to try and get on the interweb. Bless her.
Well, what we've also got to think is Microsoft has the money. Microsoft is rich as ever, and they have the money to be able to ship copies of XP for $5 each. You know, it's not necessarily going to make things any cheaper for netbook manufacturers to ship Linux if Microsoft is offering really great discounts.
So I guess the question for us then is there anything that we can do to help people who are trying to install software on their netbooks?
No, until they all start using a standardized distro.
Also in the news, the creation of the CompiS Council has come around to unify CompiS development. It was created as a result of the general unrest in the CompiS community. Now, I, for one, am surprised that CompiS has managed to hold together this long as it is. What do you guys think?
Well, hasn't this happened before?
Yeah, it has happened before, yeah.
And what happened to the last unification of Beryl and CompiS?
Yeah, it forked off again. There's now, is it CompiS++ and CompiS Nomad? And there's people, I think the nature of these folks is they want more all the time. So they're always pushing to get more features, more stuff, and therefore generally forking. So yeah, this is another reunification of the CompiS community.
Is it because developers can't get their changes rolled back into the main branch, as the original CompiS Beryl fork was about?
Actually, it's a bit strange. I think it's down to features. So CompiS Nomad is for remote desktop support.
Oh, right.
And that, I think it was developed by itself separately. And again, as before, people thought, well, that's a very big change. Can we include that? Can we not include it? And there was a lot of unrest, apparently, so they decided to go ahead and do it. I think the plan is to bring it together, do a big merge, and do a big code-fixing bounty hunt, and then move forward with Nomad and similar features.
And how long before the next fork do we reckon, then? We're having some bets here. Six months?
About 3 weeks.
3 weeks? That's optimistic.
Is Fedora still working on their parallel version to CompiS? They've got their own version of the Spinny Cube and the Wobbly
Windows.
Are
you referring to AIGLX?
That's the one.
Yeah, I think that's the standard nowadays.
That's the standard?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And KDE has its own KWin-based effects?
Let's not go there, yeah. Let's not go there.
I think it's insane, really. I think they should pull themselves together. It's a relatively minor technology, and they should all be working together to improve it.
Well, you say relatively minor, but surely a lot of users see CompiS and think, that looks really hot. I want some of that action. And then switch.
I know.
At least try to switch.
I mean, I love it. I mean,
we know you. Yeah, yeah. We've seen your desktop, man.
But I haven't, I don't think I've upgraded it for the last 6 months, which is quite surprising for such a cutting edge technology.
Really? You were always like compiling SVN snapshots, weren't you?
But it became so unstable, and there was never a defined release schedule where I could add new features and know what I was getting. Yeah, a lack of organization, and this is probably why.
So moving on then, Cuba has launched its own Linux distribution called Nova. Plan is, according to Reuters, to get off the US hegemony, with the goal, according to the Cuban officials, to get half of all users migrated to Linux within 5 years, which would be damn impressive if you ask me.
Has this been personally developed by Fidel himself?
Is Fidel even seen in public nowadays? I thought it's all Raul.
He's busy working on the Fidel patch set, isn't he?
Yeah. What is this CompiS nonsense? So half of all users within 5 years. That's a massive Linux deployment if I've ever seen one before.
It is, and it's good for any country not to depend on the software of another country. Yeah, Cuba's obviously got a fascinating history of its own, but I think no matter where you are in the world, you don't want to be at the behest of one company in one powerful country.
What are you saying, that the world's at the behest of the US because of Microsoft?
Well, possibly. I mean, Microsoft is a multinational corporation, but it is obviously very strongly based in the USA, and that gives them a lot of leverage.
That's a fair point. I think the UK government spends, you know, quite a fair bit of money subsidising strategic industries like farming, because you know, the thought is that we should be self-sufficient in these key areas. Mm. And why should software not be one of those?
Yeah. Well, of course, the UK does suck in the free software world for some reason. We seem to be behind the rest of the world in many, many places. I think someone did a survey a few years ago, and we found that the UK was one of the most pro-Microsoft countries in the world, which is depressing when you think about it, really.
Well, yeah, well, we did have a situation where Mr. Tony Blair was attending product launches from Microsoft when he was Prime Minister. Nice. That's not particularly good protocol, is it, really? Especially after Microsoft had been convicted of monopoly.
Mike, do your Tony Blair impression for us.
Well, yeah, it's not about if I do a Tony Blair impression or not.
You couldn't see his hands moving there.
Continuing on, of course, our big story on Tux Radar right now is Firefox benchmarks. We checked Firefox running on Windows XP, comparing its JavaScript execution speed against Fedora 10 running the same software. Do you guys find Firefox slow on Linux, fast on Linux?
Yeah, I do find it quite slow, I suppose.
Well, we did some benchmarks, obviously, for the site, and lots of nice graphs and stuff. And using the V8 benchmark, which is Google's own benchmark to the JavaScript, Windows Firefox scored 241 blahs. There's no actual unit required. Linux scored 182. And there were lots of comments, lots of flames saying, clearly it's your NVIDIA driver or your X acceleration architecture or blah, 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 blah.
No.
That's causing the problem. And that's obviously very suspicious to start with. So we ran the same test on Fedora 10 using Wine, running the Windows Firefox on Wine on Fedora. And it scored higher than Linux. So Windows Firefox was scored 241, Linux Firefox 182, Linux Wine Windows Firefox 227.
Oh, that's still a big gap there.
So remarkably close. Right. It's about, 13 units or something. It's very, very close to the actual Windows score running the Windows version.
Yeah.
And that's with the same, you know, NVIDIA driver, X architecture, blah, 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 all that same nonsense. It's just faster when you run the Windows version on Linux, which should not be the case. Come on, guys. Why does open source fail on open source?
It does seem like, it's hard to tell at this stage, but it does look like it's to do with compilation. Firefox on Windows is compiled with Microsoft Visual C. Whereas on Linux, of course, it's compiled with GCC. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about optimizations, different flags you can use, but out of the box experience, this sucks.
I think I could try to compile Mozilla when it was open sourced. Was it 98 or something? I think it was. I thought, wow, anyone could change the source code.
Yeah.
Which is the problem. I thought, wow, anyone can release it themselves.
Did you look through the source code? HTML, CPP.
I know now there's definitely a big reason why Apple chose WebKit rather than Gecko. I mean, I'm sure it's wonderful, and I'm a Firefox user myself. I'm totally behind Firefox. But I think there is a lot of scope problems in compilation. And fortunately, 3.1 Firefox is due out in a month.
Yes, it's due out at the end of the first quarter.
Right, so that's about a month then.
Yeah.
And that promises big improvements in JavaScript speed.
And they should also get the build scripts and just run them by the Gentoo team, because I'm sure they'd drop in a few flags, like, you know, fomit instructions and things like that.
Possibly. Yeah, well, ultimately, no one compiles it themselves nowadays. Firefox is just too big. It's like OpenOffice.org. It takes a long time to compile, a lot of dependencies. No one does it.
Have you ever actually tried to compile OpenOffice?
We did a test once in the Linux format. Yeah, I did it a long time ago. Never again. Never again.
Is it still finishing at the moment?
It didn't actually work. If I remember correctly. It bailed out about three quarters of the way through as a missing dependency.
Great.
So yeah, no one does it anymore. The distros need to be getting the right version out.
Yes.
The hot topic for this podcast is whether we feel the worldwide recession is going to help or hinder Linux and free software. So, Mike, what do you think?
Well, we've just talked about how HP is no longer going to ship Linux on its netbooks, the cheap computers that you think everyone would be buying in this recession time. So that's bad news. But, you know, people are looking to save a dime everywhere, save a few quid. If we as a community can market Linux that well, this saves you money, saves you time. You don't have to go out and buy virus scanners and spyware fixes. Then I think that will work.
Stop, that's rubbish. Stop. If we start marketing Linux as being the cheap alternative, we lose. We just lose. Okay. People say, well, you know, I can't really afford all the great features of Windows, but I can get the cheap version of Linux instead.
Like a starter edition.
Yeah, no, that's just bad.
So you're saying that it's actually not relevant. The recession isn't
going to make any difference. No, I'm saying that particular angle. If we try and market Linux as being a cheap thing, you know, it's a wrong tack to be taking. People will start thinking, you know, there was a company not so far from here that tried to roll out OpenOffice.org recently across all its employees.
Right.
And they're saying, why can't we afford to pay for Microsoft Word? That's not the angle we should be taking, you know. It's just as functional, just as good. We can say it's faster, perhaps not with Firefox.
Well, yeah.
But not cheaper.
So why would the recession have an effect on the use of Linux?
But it is cheaper.
Or wouldn't it?
Well, because think about it. If you're on the Microsoft gravy train, it's cheaper insofar as you can get off it. It's less expensive. But we shouldn't be pushing that as the most important reason to switch.
But if we're talking about whether the recession is going to affect Linux adoption or not,
with respect to the recession, it is the most important thing.
It's a very important thing. I totally agree. But if it's the angle you say it, if we say, listen, it's a cheap alternative, you lose, I think. Inexpensive is a vaguely better word.
Well, all right then. So there's a worldwide recession. Let's migrate to something that's faster. That's illogical.
Look at most companies. They've already paid the Microsoft tax. They've got Vista and deployed, or XP deployed, or whatever it is, 2000, I don't know what, on all the machines. Why would they then say, hey guys, let's change all that to save money we've already spent and retrain everybody?
But I think cost is an important part of it. And it's not so much the fact that Linux is cheaper, it's that you can predict how much it's going to cost you, and you can predict how much it's going to cost you over the next 10 years if you're a company.
It's called what they call software assurance on Microsoft. I'm not saying it's a great thing, but it's a guaranteed cost. Pay us this protection money, basically.
Yep.
Is what it adds up to be, and we'll give you access to all the Microsoft stuff you want in the future.
And you won't get the BSA knocking on your door, presumably.
You probably will do that anyway.
Well, yeah,
just
that's true.
Check your licenses and stuff. But it's the same sort of thing, protection money. So it's a guaranteed cost, it's predictable, everyone knows how to use Windows, everyone knows how to use Microsoft Word, there's no training cost required. In a recession, I think people should be thinking, yes, it saves us money, it's a cheaper alternative, true, absolutely true, but what are the actual costs of moving? It's not free. It's actually quite high, because most geeks out there will not take the time to support their local school or support the local small businesses and say, listen,
yes,
I can help you answer questions, I can help you with this. They don't care. They think, yes, switch, because it's just better, it's faster, more secure.
But that's the corporate side of it. What about the end user side? The people building a new box and then think, oh, should I spend £70 on Vista Ultimate Turbo Championship Edition, or should I give this Linux thing a go?
I don't think the recession will have that much of an impact on those kind of people. I think most people will still go for their version of Vista because they want to play games and do the stuff they always wanted to do. It might work on small embedded devices, and maybe more embedded devices will continue to use Linux more. I think for medium, large businesses, Linux is going to make a lot of sense during the recession. And I think that's where there'll be a large part of growth.
But didn't Linux do quite well out of the dot-com bubble, the 90s thing?
Yeah, I guess look at Google.
So sort of Solaris, and where's that now? Okay, so getting back to the point then.
I think it can only help, as I've said.
What about if you are PC World? Because, you know, Mike said he went to PC World, which for our overseas listeners is a gigantic computer megastore in the UK. They went to PC World. The advisor there was saying, you know, don't buy this Linux thing. From their perspective, I remember the ASUS people saying they get some crazy, like, 8 times more Linux netbooks returned
than
Windows. So from PC World's perspective, this is good financial sense. They haven't got the cash, time, bother to think about this kind of returns Linux. They don't want that kind of hassle. It costs them money when someone returns hardware. So that it's in their interest in a recessionary period. Let's focus on pushing Windows because we know it works.
This is true, yeah. I mean, how to sort that out, how to perhaps stop selling Linux as a direct drop-in Windows replacement is another matter. But that's what's causing the problem there. And yeah, if it's costing them time and money, you can understand why they're doing it. And perhaps the same with HP, as we discussed in the news section.
So where is the recession really going to make the biggest difference then? You think big business?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I think looking at the next 5 or 10 years, if I was in charge of purchasing computer hardware and software, I'd look at something predictable, stable, and something you have direct control over. And for me, that's Linux and open source.
Wasn't that sort of true 5 years ago as well?
Yeah, but true, maybe you probably, as as the IT director, had more money.
Right.
You weren't under the same pressures that you would be under recession conditions.
So they have to do the same thing, just with less money.
Yeah, I'm sure they have to, yeah.
Mm. Netbooks are a completely different case because, I mean, most Aspire ones aren't bought by huge businesses with huge budgets. I mean, certainly as they come out of the box, they look quite... They don't look like the sort of thing that you'd use to get serious work done with. So if you wanted to get serious work done, you'd buy something with Vista or something with XP.
But that doesn't seem to make sense to me, because if you think about netbook's price, the Windows license is a higher proportion of that compared to gigantic, you know, IBM or HP server.
I think you're right. I think the proof in that is that XP has gone way past its end of life. You know, Microsoft are pushing it in that way.
Yeah.
So the price difference doesn't make, you know, isn't a difference when it comes to netbooks.
They could give it away. They could absolutely give it away for the next 10 years if they wanted to.
Are we really saying that the recession won't directly be good for Linux, but because it will be bad for Vista and Windows 7, it will provide an opportunity for Linux to grow?
I think on those terms, I think obviously PC sales are going to drop. So companies like Microsoft won't be able to spend quite so much money in R&D, whereas Linux development, open source development, might actually increase as people maybe have more time to develop software. It'd be the inverse of what companies perhaps like Apple and Microsoft are able to do. So that's a good thing, I think, for Linux, and a bad thing for other companies.
It's a good point you make about research and development. Yeah, because Microsoft has been under flak recently from some journalists, analysts, for having such a huge...
Shareholders, yeah.
Having such a huge R&D division. And they come out with a lot of gunk and a few interesting things, but spending that amount of money when people just want a decent, reliable operating system is troublesome. Whereas in the Linux world, this is just ideas coming out of people's heads. It doesn't need a huge budget.
I think my prediction for the recession is that few companies will switch to Linux, very few. But it will start them moving towards Linux.
Right.
Because these big businesses, who I think are the ones who are most likely to see the real changes, it takes some time to go through strategies and plans and get out of the fifth gear and down to first gear and then redo all their stuff. It takes time for them to happen. But they're going to start thinking about it now. We can save money. And that means in 5 years' time, 6 years' time, they'll be using Linux.
They'll implement it.
As a direct result of the recession.
Yes, yeah.
Well, not, we don't, in the short term.
We don't know how long this recession is going to last, sadly.
So. That's true, yes. Yeah. So we're now about halfway through our podcast. Still to come is Discovery of the Week, where we all spat off some wonderful things we've found in the last 14 days or so.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the open ballot on whether Ubuntu is good for the distro community or not. Keep listening.
Right, let's ramp up the excitement even more with Discovery of the Week, which are programs or websites or technologies that we've found over the last 7 days and which are really cool. So, Graham, what have you got?
My discovery of the week is Qt Creator, an integrated...
You just call it Qt.
Yeah.
Not cute.
It depends. It depends on the company I'm
Did
keeping.
Did your envelope full of 50s not arrive this week or something, Graham?
Yeah, Qt Creator. Thanks, Trolltech. Yeah, it's an IDE for Qt development. I have seen it in a demo before, but never actually used it before this week. I actually finished my long-awaited Monome step sequencer and released it to the Monome community, and everybody complained that it was too difficult to use because you needed to type on the command line. So I promised that I'd look into creating a GUI for it so they can just click on start and start creating notes, which is what it does. So I downloaded and tried Qt Creator for the first time, and I'm really impressed. I know you're going to think I'm sponsored by Choltec, but I'm not. For the first time, you can drag and drop widgets into a view, press build, and it'll build and compile and run, and you can do that on Windows, on OS X, and on Linux using the same project file, which is the first time I've come across that.
Doesn't that sound just like Qt Designer? What's the difference?
Well, Qt Designer wasn't integrated with the programming environment, so you couldn't add.
Oh, so you code in here too?
Yeah. It's all integrated. Yeah, it's actually got Qt Designer as part of it. They've just embedded that as a large kind of widget on a tab view. You drag your widgets into the canvas, switch to the source code view, add the functions that you need, switch back to the designer view, click on the single build button, and you've got a working application. It works really nicely. Context help is brilliant. The predictive text works well. And the single project file means you can build it on any Qt platform. It's free, and it's GPL and LGPL for 4.5. It's due out in March, the final version.
Oh, so it's part of Qt?
It'll be in the 4.5 release, which should be due out March, April.
It sounds like it's trying to replace KDevelop.
That's what I was going to say. It's what KDevelop should have been.
Losing fans now, Graham.
But it has spent many, many years reinventing the wheel and never actually quite getting there, treading water. It's a lovely interface. It's quite simple and straightforward to use, and probably the closest we get to Visual Studio on the Linux desktop.
Nice. So, Paul, you got a gem there?
I do. It's not terribly new, but it's new to me, and that's what matters, right?
Absolutely.
It's SSHFS, which is a hideous thing to pronounce.
FFS.
SSHFS. I use Nautilus, a GNOME desktop environment, and I click, go connect to servers and stuff, and I connect to servers, and I can just drag and drop files around in my Nautilus.
Okay.
Between using SFTP on one side and the server and my local machine on the other side. And that works really nicely. I like doing that. It's a very fast way to get files across securely. SSHFS, and I hope I never have to pronounce that again, basically does the same thing for mounting file systems in general from the command line. And it's built on Fuse.
Fuse, of course.
File
yeah.
system in user space, which means you can just mount it as a user anywhere you like. It just appears as a directory on your file system. You can copy files to and from to the remote server, SFTP.
Mm-hmm.
Totally SSH encrypted, so it's all safe. And actually caches the directory contents as well. So it's really, really fast. LS, whatever, it's just instant, basically. It just knows.
That's useful on slow connection, yeah.
Yeah, so it's basically a normal mount, just encrypted using SSH over SFTP.
So how did you install this? Is it really complicated, or is it starting to be bundled
It's Fuse.
Right.
Fuse obviously all runs in user space, so it's very easy to do.
On the SSH server, is that just standard SSH running?
Well, SFTP is obviously built into the OpenSSH server anyway, so most people are running it already. So if it has SCP and SFTP and SSH, this will just work. So it's very, very nice. Recommended.
Great. Meanwhile, I've been looking at some games this month because I'm lazy, and one of the ones I've come across is called Project LRNJ Slime Forest. Sounds nice.
That's a catchy name, that one.
It is.
LRNJ Slime Forest.
Yep, it just rolls off the tongue.
What does LRNJ stand for?
I don't actually know.
Mike fail.
It's actually got something to do with learning Japanese, so learn Japanese or something like that. This is a console-style RPG that teaches you Japanese characters. Earlier on in the decade, I was learning Japanese, and I've forgotten a lot of it now. But this is quite good for brushing up on these characters. So what you do is you've got an overhead map view. You walk around Zelda style, Final Fantasy style, and then you get into a battle with a bunch of weird goo characters. But what they do is they throw kanji or katakana, Japanese script characters, at you, and you've got to type them in using the romanized form as quickly as possible, otherwise they'll totally own you and waste you.
Oh, so wow. It's like Typing of the Dead, then.
It's like Typing of the Dead, yeah. Sega's typing, testing, gore-em-up slash fest thing. So it's quite good for training your memory with these characters.
Does it do hiragana as well?
Yes, it does hiragana, katakana, and kanji. So all bases covered. But I haven't spent a great deal of time with it, so I don't know if there are loads of huge dungeons or everything like that. But
now, why can't they make that same sort of game out of compiling software? You need dependency libfoobarbaz. Aha! ABC get install libfoobarbaz.
I think that's a fantastic idea, because we all know that compiling software and finding dependencies is incredibly boring. If you can make a game out of it, a contest, you can win stuff on the internet. You know, then this would be great. Instead of searching for libfoobar and it having the wrong, compiler version, then brilliant. Now, how do we do that? Meanwhile, Andrew.
That sounds great, Mike-san. Unlike you, I've not had time to play much games because I've been busy working on that magazine thing, What We Do. But I did find out that the German word for...
You can't even bring something to say, can you?
I did find out that the German word for meerkat is something like, forgive my pronunciation, Erdmännchen, which roughly translates as little earth men.
Erdmännchen.
Which I just found really cool.
Well, meerkats are really cool, aren't they?
They are really cool. And also, we know from Blackadder that the Germans have no word for fluffy.
True.
But they do have a kick-ass word for meerkat.
So how do you think this will be useful in your day-to-day life, this discovery?
I don't think it will.
Oh, well.
But it'll make me happier every time I think about it, which surely in these dark times is what we need.
This man has the solution.
Right, this is time for our open ballot. You can probably hear paper shuffling. That indicates seriousness. This podcast, what we want to find out from you is what you think of Ubuntu. We've had loads and loads of emails recently from people accusing us of being biased towards Ubuntu, of neglecting other distros. We get the message.
Yeah, thanks, Mark.
We get the message. Please stop. But it did make us think, what is so wrong about Ubuntu? It's become really popular since it was released in 2004. They've got really, really stupid distro names like, you know, Warty Warthog, Breezy Badger, Edgy Eft.
Breezy Badger is the silliest.
Yeah.
But apart from that, what is there not to like? I mean, it's stable, it's built on Debian. They've got lots and lots of packages for it. It's free software and it works. You know, why are people so anti it? Is anyone here anti it?
Not me.
No, not me either.
Paul, please.
Well, I guess I better have me, hadn't
tell,
I, really?
Tell us that you hate Ubuntu. Why?
I have recently switched away from Ubuntu. That much is true. I am now using Fedora 10 for all my Linuxing. I switched away from Ubuntu because of these whingers, readers, writing in saying, stop talking about Ubuntu. And I said, what do you mean? I was busy writing a response to these letters saying, you know, we barely cover Ubuntu. I was flipping through the pages of Linux format, counting all the times we said Ubuntu, to say, listen, we only mentioned it like 10 times. And I counted, and the actual final number was very high.
Right.
A lot. And I thought, oh my goodness, look at all these brown screenshots. Look at all these Ubuntu mentions we drop in. Without even thinking, without even noticing, I hadn't noticed. I just sat until I sat down and counted, I hadn't noticed how much we mentioned Ubuntu in general. How much we are biased towards Ubuntu without realizing. I can see why, if you're very sensitive to that, it would annoy you a lot.
But surely people have just got to accept Ubuntu is the most popular distro. Therefore, and not just in our magazine, and not just on Tux Radio, but in other places, it's going to get more coverage.
More coverage, yes, but what we were doing in the magazine was saying things like, here's how you install this software on Ubuntu.
On the most popular distro.
Yeah, and ignoring everyone else.
Ignoring a very small distro.
Everyone else.
Everyone else is not a very small distro. That's Fedora, SUSE, Slackware, macOS, everything.
Yeah, but
every other person.
That's 30%.
You end up. No, it's not 30%. No, we did a survey for Linux Format that said 67%, I forget, use Ubuntu. Now, what that... It doesn't mean that they only use Ubuntu.
True.
Just that they use Ubuntu, which means that 35% approximately use definitely no Ubuntu. So of that, you know, it's hard to know exactly what the numbers break down as, but I would estimate that a third of people use Ubuntu exclusively.
Right.
The rest use Ubuntu and something else.
Multi-distro.
Or not Ubuntu at all. So it's a lot of people, and by only saying Ubuntu, 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 we're basically making the mainstream media error of saying Ubuntu is Linux. And I think people should be able to expect more from Linux Format and Tux Radio.
But getting back to the original question,
yeah,
and whether Ubuntu
yeah.
is a good or bad thing, I think you actually hit upon it there. In the broad media, like to refer to Ubuntu, they name check Ubuntu. When an article about Linux comes up, you'll often see something about Ubuntu on the BBC, for example. And I think that's definitely a good thing. Ubuntu is an accessible Linux desktop. It's something that our parents might have heard of when it comes to Linux. It's much easier to understand and see what it does when you actually have problems explaining what Linux does. And I think that's the best thing that Ubuntu has done, which is bring Linux into the mainstream and give it an identity.
I think, yes, I totally agree with that. The problem is, if you ask Ubuntu users, what's so great about Ubuntu? They're not going to have that many answers. They're going to say, well, APT is great. Well, yes, that's not Ubuntu, that's Debian. Well, you know, GNOME's great. Well, that's not Ubuntu, that's GNOME being great. And all these things, you know, Synaptic, I'm not sure what it is, all these different reasons they'll give. They're just great bits of free software.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, and it annoys me that, you know, from a developer's perspective, all these coders are doing wonderful work at getting no name checking. They're getting nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
They're getting subsumed into the Ubuntu brand name and said, yes, Ubuntu is just great. Without really recognizing all the work's going into it. I'm not saying, you know, Richard Stallman style, GNU, Linux, /X11, /GNOME, da-da-da-da-da. But these people work hard.
That's pretty much the same as what Nix Hamster says on tuxradar.com.
I am Nix Hamster! Wink, wink!
Yeah, he says, it's long been known in marketing circles that only one name can own the word that defines the industry or product. We've had our Xerox, our Kleenex, our Coke, we could probably add Hoover, you know, loads of other things. Now we have Ubuntu. You know, the only place where it could cause problems is if it alienates all the people who are writing code. Most of them only do it for what little acknowledgement they get. Many could quit if they start to feel that Ubuntu is getting all the credit and that they're being ignored.
Do you not think that must be how the Debian people feel a little bit? I know, Mike, you're going to see Steve McIntyre tomorrow.
Yeah.
But you must think, you know, Debian puts in a lot of
huge amount of work
to get Ubuntu to work.
But you shouldn't do it to get the credit. People say this about the GPL. The GPL is a great license, but people say, oh, if someone's going to use GPL software in some of my software, I should get the credit. No, if you really want credit, choose a different license.
Yeah, and I think I'd be happy just to see my software being used. Absolutely. The more people, the better.
That's
how many people are using KAlbum?
Graham's mum.
Yes, from the blog, Hugh, one of our regular blogger poster forumers, says that anyone who thinks Ubuntu is somehow inhibiting Linux or other distros is a fool. No matter how successful it becomes, it will never influence what Debian does, or indeed the big other parent distros. Rakios agrees, anything that promotes one version of GNU Linux helps to promote them all. And Cage, who's a newcomer, I don't think I've seen him before.
John Cage.
Nicholas Cage.
Ah.
Cage says, I can understand why the purists are maybe a bit annoyed. Perhaps they don't feel quite so elite. Now, do they want to be the only geek in the playground, as Joey Elijah says on Tux Radar?
This has come up in the past where certain elements of the community have feared Linux becoming so mainstream because their niche, their geeky subject of interest. Suddenly everybody's involved in it. But I think we've got to get past that now. It's really, we've got two options. Either Linux stays as a small piece of fantastic technology, but that's scattered over lots of little projects, or we have a united front to take on Microsoft, to take on Apple, and to present this as the big alternative to their operating systems.
Is it just the GNU people who hate, who fear mainstream? Obviously, Herd is the most striking example of fearing mainstream.
Yeah,
Herd is awesome.
So it's a fear of mainstream in general. And now that Linux is threatening to no longer be an absolute underdog, people are looking to jump ship to other places like Calibri.
FreeBSD.
FreeBSD. Well, I was thinking slightly smaller than that.
Oh, right.
Yeah, the mainstream is just a bad thing, it seems. People don't like it. They like being different.
Counterculturalism, yeah. People who feel that they're part of a...
Counterculturalism, wow.
Yeah, yeah. People who feel that they're part of a group of people with their own goals and language and terms.
I think it might be something to do with Canonical rather than Ubuntu itself. I mean, just because they're a huge company, they've got lots and lots of money, and people like to, as you say, like to associate themselves with the underdog.
Mm.
And here's this, you know, really, really rich bloke who's been in space and could no way be described as an underdog. So people sort of naturally dislike it, maybe a little bit, or are suspicious. What we found striking from the feedback we got on Tux Radar and from the blog is that the most coherent, simple respondents were those who do not fear Ubuntu. People that were anti-Ubuntu tended to rant a little bit. Possibly the most coherent response we got was from Sorpigal, sorry if I've pronounced your name wrong, who said, I welcome Ubuntu's imminent demise. I predict 2 years or less before Canonical cuts funding and dumps the project. This will be good for the community.
Shouldn't that be 2 years or fewer?
Could that be good for the community?
Which community is he talking about?
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Mothers Against Ubuntu.
I assume the Linux community, the free software community.
Okay, so getting to the absolute point here, Mark Shuttleworth, if he pulls funding or otherwise, right now he is throwing money at free software. This is not a bad thing for anyone. He's funding people to work on free stuff. Obviously he's doing, you know, Launchpad and other non-free stuff, but right now he's giving money away.
But then if there is just one person, you know, as you say, investing so much money in the direction of a huge Linux project, surely that skews the direction that development takes. You know, there's the possibility that he could just take that in the direction that he wants to go, in ignoring the wishes of the rest of the Linux users.
But then it could fork, couldn't it? If that happens...
Well, with Mint, we've seen that.
Exactly, with Mint or somebody who come along...
Crunchbang.
Crunchbang. There are already loads of Ubuntu spin-offs outside of the main ones like Kubuntu and Zubuntu. There are loads of them, and this has been one of free software's greatest strengths and occasionally one of its flaws. But, yeah, I think rest assured, if Mark Shuttleworth did anything to displease the community, then... You know, there'd be a lot of running around and new projects being launched, and one of them would take over, like Xorg.
For me, the only problem of Ubuntu dominance is that I had become almost reliant on Ubuntu doing things the way Ubuntu does it. Having switched to Fedora, I still go to Applications, Accessories, and look for the little terminal button. It's not there. It's under System Tools.
System Tools, somewhere
random. I find Yum. I always forget the parameters to Yum, the arguments to Yum. What does it mean? Yum, give me some stuff. I want APT back. You know, I just know the way Ubuntu does it, and I'm used to the way Ubuntu does it. And because Fedora does things slightly differently, I've lost the skills to survive outside of Ubuntu.
Sounds like you need a good Fedora book.
Yeah, thanks, Graham. So I think that just about wraps it up for our episode for now. Look forward to...
But there is just one more thing.
Okay, Mike, well, take it away.
Right, well, those folks who've tried development snapshots of the next Ubuntu release, those are the people who actually like it, 9.04, aka Jaunty, may have found that you can't kill the X server with the traditional Control, Alt, and Backspace combo, as you normally can with X. You know, program crashes, locks up the display, hit Control at Backspace, you're back to login screen. But the Ubuntu team has decided to disable this feature for whatever reason in 9.04.
Because it's bloody annoying.
How annoying?
You're typing away, as we do being journalists, type away, and you accidentally press Control-Alt-Backspace, which, let's face it, is very unlikely.
It's not ever happened.
But it frags everything. You lose all your work.
I've never done it by accident in 10 years of using Linux.
Neither have I. No. It's very useful, in fact.
So anyway, you can get this back, fortunately, because it's a godsend if a graphical application or a game crashes and locks up the display. So what you need to do is open up a terminal window and enter this. Don't zap, all one word, space, dash, dash, disable. So don't zap with the disable flag. And now the X server will never defy you again.
So enough of that nonsense. That brings us to the happy end of podcast number 2. Just to remind you, there's an awesome subscriptions deal to Linux Format Magazine online at tinyurl.com/podcastlxf. All the notes for this podcast are, of course, on the website. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with more whatever the heck we do in this podcast.
Great stuff.
Great
awesome
stuff.
Awesome stuff.
And Jesus Jelly in 2 weeks. And we'll see you then. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.